Good afternoon, St. Louis DGS on KMOX. Happy Friday to everybody. Friday the 13th. Andrew, you're a little uncomfortable?
Not crazy about this whole Friday the 13th, guys. Don't love it.
Why?
I'm superstitious.
Are you?
Yes.
I believe in things that aren't real.
Bad things. Shut up. I'm a believer that bad things happen.
Got you there.
Yeah, well, I'm a believer that bad things tend to happen on Friday the 13th.
Such as?
Based on what power?
Based on the power of, I don't know.
Triskaidekaphobia.
Superstitions are not, they were not made up whole cloth. They have rooting in folklore and you know.
They were made up by people who believed in fairies.
Why did I put it on the sheet? I don't know. I don't know. I don't know what I thought was going to happen.
Didn't know the way you thought it would?
Yeah, didn't know what I was expecting.
Can I just say I feel for you right now?
Yeah,
I don't know why. I just feel like you need a hug.
I mean, the bad thing is actually now happening to him on Friday the 13th.
Yeah, self-fulfilling prophecy.
Look at that. That turned quickly.
I don't feel bad for him at all.
Wow. Yeah. It just keeps coming.
It's just like a regular thing.
Chris will say something else he thinks is funny, and then it'll upset everybody. And make it your own problem.
Okay.
There you go.
Andrew is a real delight.
What did we say this morning when I came in and he wasn't here and you said, what's he doing? I said, he's out having adventures.
Yeah, the Andrew things.
He's doing Andrew things.
Mm-hmm.
Were there adventures today?
There are always adventures.
I was getting a sausage and cheese biscuit.
Oh, that's an adventure.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I'm sure it was an adventure.
Well, it was kind of.
See?
Because they weren't acknowledged. So I pulled up and I gave them the code at McDonald's for the app that you mm-hmm. order on. And they're like, well, do you have a name? And I was like, oh, I do, actually. And I told them, I was like, it's Andrew. And they go, oh, okay. Okay, well, okay. Yeah, I guess you can pull around. And then they bring up the order on the screen and it's like 18 sausage McGriddles and 17 more chicken. And I'm like, that's not even close to the right order. And they're like, oh, no, don't worry about that. Don't even think about that.
don't even think about
that. They said, don't even think about it. And I went, okay, I shall not. And so I pull up and they're like, all right, that'll be 61.22. And I'm like, I just ordered one sausage biscuit. I think it's like $2. And they're like, oh, well, that can't be right. Did you give them the code? And I go, yeah, I gave them the code. And they were like, well, what's the name under it? And I was like, Andrew. And they're like, oh, okay. Yeah, I see that right here. Yeah, $61 for the 85 chicken McGriddles. I'm like, no, how can that not be? So then everybody in the store comes back and they look at it. And they go, well, what was your order? And I said, it's a sausage biscuit with cheese and a large Coke.
I'm going to need you to think about a price. I want to buy that story and make it into a movie.
Hey, you say, is there an adventure? I'm like, you know what? Actually, believe it or not,
Dave,
there was an adventure.
That might need to be a series
to get to the entire depth of it.
Oh, a musical one.
Yeah.
And I can't tell if he's the protagonist or not.
I am.
That's why it's a great show, though. You never know.
I am the protagonist. What did I do wrong? I didn't do anything.
This is like Andrew's version of 24.
The 24 minutes that I spent in the drive-thru.
What if instead of that happening, you ordered your sandwich, but they gave you like $50 worth of food? They just handed it to you. They charged you for the one sandwich. They made a mistake in your favor. What do you do?
He would have driven away as quickly as a person can drive.
No, because I don't want a bunch of chicken McGriddles. Those are gross.
Okay, what if it was stuff you wanted?
Well, then I've been in this situation before, and then you're extra given the game away. I was actually in this situation at the KFC downstairs last night.
How so?
Well, I went through the drive-thru, and I had ordered on the app, and so I drove through. I was going to pick up some chicken and bring it to the wife, and then on our way to the magic thing. So I go through,
man,
and I
you
say,
live your life.
Yeah. I go through. I'm a busy man, and so I go through, and I say, you know, I got my app order, picking up an order for Andrew, and they go, oh, can you come into the lobby?
I smell sequel.
Yep.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. This is the act two. And this is actually a prequel. And they're like, well, can you come into the lobby for us? And I go, No, I can't. Can I just pick it up? It's just a chicken sandwich and two chicken littles. Can I just pick that up? And they go, well, all right, pull through and we'll talk about it.
We'll talk about it.
So I pull up and they open and they're like, can you confirm what this order is for us? Because they didn't think that it was really me. They thought I was trying to steal somebody else's food. So I pull up.
Based on what?
I don't know. I never got an answer
to
that.
Maybe this is how they treat every online order.
You've got a food stealer look about you.
And so I shut up. And so I
that's harsh.
And right? So I pull up and they're like, can you confirm this order? And so I confirm the order once again and I confirm the name on it and they go, and they just kind of like shake their head at me like, no, I don't think this is you. And I'm like, can I please just have, it's under this, I gave my full name.
How many stories of these you got? Could you fill an hour?
Maybe. Look, I go to fast food a lot and stuff gets weird there a whole lot.
Is it just me or do you notice that most of these circle around Andrew using an app?
Yeah.
I'm wondering if there's an app issue. Maybe the mouse in your car, the haunted mouse.
Maybe the mouse.
The
is
ghost
typing.
Of mouse's past.
The mouse is typing on the app.
I'm okay with Friday the 13th. I'm not okay with Elam using his spooky Halloween voice.
Oh.
To narrate.
He's done it a
life.
Few times today.
The ghost mouse.
You've done spooky Halloween voice today.
The spooky Halloween.
Yeah. Yeah. See?
I did eventually talk them into it, and of course I was lying the whole time, and it was somebody else's food, and I stole it and ran.
Good for you.
No, I'm kidding. I talked them into giving me my food.
I don't think
they'll teach the colonel.
I don't see you running.
So no one here would take the food.
I'm a coward.
If they gave, not if they gave you that much. If you walked off and you're like, oh, extra sandwich, I'd be like, yay, lucky me.
Okay, so
if it was like 20, if it was like 20 of them, I'm going to go back in because it's somebody else's order.
So part of that for me is that I don't want to create problems in my own backyard, right? If I go to, to these places a lot.
You literally don't crap where you eat.
Yes, thank you. I wasn't going to say that, but you can say it. I don't want to create problems. They know me, right? I go there a lot, right? They're not going to be like, which is
the guys last night didn't know.
Which is all the more insulting that they were like, we're pretty sure this isn't you. I'm like, I am in here every single day. But if it's in a place where I don't normally go, like if I'm on vacation in Memphis or something and they give me a whole bunch of other people's food, yeah, I'm taking it. I'm driving away. Because you're not going to catch me.
Not going to catch me.
I'm in the wind. I'm on the lam. I'm doing the race. You're not going to find me.
Well, it's not like they have a marshal service or something come after you.
But if I'm going to go there frequently, then when I come back, they'll be like, hey, we gave you like $40 worth of someone else's food and you ran off with it.
Let me ask you this.
I'm going to doubt that.
Lifetime.
Yeah, I doubt they remember.
Mm-hmm. Because there are mistakes that happen, and sometimes you get free stuff. Sometimes you leave and there are no fries or whatever in the bag.
You get hosed sometimes. Mm-hmm.
Lifetime, do you think you're ahead or behind?
I don't know what that means. I'm sorry.
Like,
have you gotten more free stuff than the thing you left behind? Jeez.
Okay.
Really?
You've had more
whatever
stuff.
Whatever the question is, if it's where am I at in life, it's asking you from your food.
Uh-huh. If you balance out the extras that you'd be given versus the stuff that you were supposed to get that you didn't get,
yes,
definitely behind.
Okay,
far behind.
Yeah, yeah. I would say the same for me too.
Hmm.
I'd say it's far more often that something is forgotten. And you're just not going to go back by the time. I'm not going to go back for $1.50 or a $2 item or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Man, that brings me back to my fast food days working at Mr. Donut. And I worked midnights, Friday and Saturday at 16 years old because I guess child labor laws. Yeah. And, I had to bring home money to the parents. And so I was working on a Sunday morning and I'd been there all night and I made all the donuts and it was just about time for me to leave and I'm wrapping up and I think I was going to my girlfriend's house or doing something fun. And I can picture this guy right now. He looked like Boss Hogg. Okay, y'all got Boss Hogg.
Yeah.
And he pulled in a giant convertible with a whole bunch of booby ladies. Just a bunch of young, attractive, almost like swimsuit model women.
So was the East Side a thing then too?
My East Side was.
Yeah.
And he comes swaggering in there, and he's dressed all in white with white leather shoes, and they're all giggling and stuff. And one of them's like, I want a chocolate Long John. I wanted this. And he goes, you know what, boy? Give me all the donuts. Just box them up and give them to me. And then the girls are like, you don't have to do that, Boss Hogg. He's like, I do what I want, and I eat all these donuts. And so I'm literally sneaking out the back, and my boss is like, Dave. And I had to start all over.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I hate that guy.
So did the Dukes.
Yeah.
They hated him too.
I hope his life went bad.
You got to figure after that many donuts, there was a heart attack somewhere in his future. Karma.
Yeah, your own boss hog. I can't get past that.
Yep. Yep. Sure did.
Was there a Roscoe P. Coltrane in there too?
There was a guy that came in one night. Ethan, his uncle and I were working there. I got Eric a job there. And it was midnight and it was hot. And a guy came in an overcoat. We're like, oh, God. And, hey, can I help you? And he's like, I haven't asked if my little friend can eat with us. And,
oh, no.
And I'm like, dude, you show me that little friend and something bad's going to happen. And he opened up his coat and he had one of those little monkeys like on the Little Rascals. And he threw it at me and I caught it and threw it in one motion and it landed on the donuts. It just starts going crazy on the donuts.
Come on.
Yeah.
This happened? This whole thing happened?
Yeah.
Like Marcel, like the guy from, the little guy from
Friends.
Friends.
And the guy left. And left the monkey, and then the monkey ran out, because the monkey's not stupid.
Wait, he left the monkey?
Yeah. And
some friend.
We called our boss, and he was like, start all over again. Like, well, he didn't eat all the donuts. You know, like, he only ate out of, like, the cherry cake donuts. And they're like, nope, monkey, got to start over.
Monkey box.
Yeah.
It's a thing.
So was it not his monkey?
Well, I mean, it was in his overcoat.
Then why did he leave without him?
I don't think he was normal, the guy.
Probably.
But see, I bet the monkey went and found him.
Yeah.
Monkeys are smart like that.
Yeah.
Probably.
They met back up on the parking
lot. The guy's running down the street, the monkey's like, I know where you're going.
I mean, they were definitely partners.
Yeah. Well, Andrew says Coco's not smart.
What?
Coco's a gorilla. That's different.
No, but I mean, they're smart. It's just,
I bet he and the monkey took turns on who played what part.
Yeah, which one gets thrown at the donut counter.
The monkey went out in the parking lot.
The monkey's like, did you grab the cash?
Yeah, the guy comes running in eating donuts, and the monkey's like, me not know.
He's like, this guy, Rocky, you just can't predict what he's going to do.
Anywhere. Should have seen him at Ponderosa.
The monkey just holds up a sign. It's like, it's not my fault.
Trying to have a nice dinner with my girlfriend. This guy's looking at everybody Salisbury steak.
What a weapon. Here, monkey. Throwing a monkey at the food and then leaving.
Yeah, I know what it feels like to catch a monkey.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's a sentence I bet has never been said on radio.
I know what it's like to catch a monkey.
I know what it's like to catch a monkey.
Maybe in a different context.
Charlie Brennan probably said it.
He did an endorsement.
Yeah, during a live reciting company.
Exactly. Rattler Pest Control can help
really
you.
I really caught a monkey on that deal. 123 DGS, happy Friday. I have one of my first hurdles with my mom's death coming up this Sunday. Nick and I are going to go to the gravesite, which we have not done yet, so...
Interesting.
Dreading it.
Yeah. It's hard.
Yeah.
It's real hard.
Andrew, have you been to yours?
Yes.
How long did it take you?
How long does it take me to...
Like, how long did it...
It's in Calvary, so it's not that... It's like 20 minutes.
No. How long did it take you to be okay to go?
Well, she doesn't have a traditional grave site, so we went and tended to some things. It took a while. It took about... Oh, gosh. 3 months? Ish.
Oh man.
We wanted to wait until we were all together again, like me and my dad and my brother and my wife. It took about 3 months before we had everything ready to go and together. And she had ashes, so but those only took about a week to get back. So
I told the story before. Sort of one of the strangest things that's ever happened to me when my dad died in 2002. March 26th. So we buried him, you know, 1st of April-ish. And I was at my sister's house. And at the time, she lived in South Rexana about 3-4 blocks from the cemetery. And we buried him, you know, 11 a.m., something like that. And we had, like, the wake, and people came to the house. And it started getting dark. And I was at my sister's. And it's probably, you know, 5:30, 6 p.m. And suddenly, I burst out the door. And I sprinted in my little suit and dress shoes as fast as I could to get to the cemetery because it was like, the thought was, it was like, it was my dad's first day at school. And his first night in the cemetery, no one knows him. He's all by himself. Now, mind you, I'm not losing my mind. I know that he's not in that grave one way or another. I know that it's not his first day at school. I know that the other dead people aren't going to pick on him. But it was the thought I had. Like, I don't want him to be alone with the sun going down this first night. And so I sprinted to the gravesite and I got there with him and I had no money. This is before like I hit it in radio. I had no money at all, but I had a $10 bill in my pocket and I put it down into the grave. So he'd have a little, he always wanted walking around money.
Nice.
So it was sweet, but it like I was compelled. Like I didn't say anything to anyone. I didn't say like, I have to go to the cemetery. I'll be right back. I just took off running.
We just hit the third anniversary of my mom passing, and it's really tough for my dad because they were married for over 60 years and they were never apart. Like they were always together. So every time when we hit this part, it's always tougher on him than I think it is for anybody else. But it's nice when we can get together and we can all go together and just kind of have that moment, right? It became really real because when mom's grave was first done, and I don't know about your dad or your mom's, but the tombstone wasn't there yet. So it took a little bit for the tombstone to get done and then to set the stone. And when they set the stone, I don't know why, but it just kind of was like a finality for me. It was so like, wow.
The stone's been there since 2002 when my dad died, and my mom's name's been on it with her birthday and a dash, which was always really weird.
It's
kind of creepy.
Yeah, I'd always make her take pictures next to it and stuff because I'm weird. I don't know if they've like filled in that date. Like it's all so weird and it's all so meaningful, and you never know what's going to hit you, and you know.
You know, it's funny you say that about not wanting him to be alone, because I've told the story about my dad passing in the hospital and how we were all there when it happened. And it was late at night. It was like 2 a.m. I think by the time we left, like 2:15, 2:30, and he's still in the room and we're leaving. They're having us like, they're not pushing us out, but it was like time to go. And I was very concerned about him being in that room alone.
Sure.
Even though
understandable,
obviously, and I said something to somebody like, is somebody going to go in there? Because I didn't want him to be alone, but didn't matter.
It's a lot of the traditions, different religions of sitting vigil.
Yeah,
you know, sitting Shiva. And
I think it does matter. I think it matters very much.
Anyway.
Anywho.
So
good luck on the anniversary.
How about them Bears?
Yeah.
Welcome back, guys. DGS on KMOX. Happy Friday to you. I am personally enjoying this gloomy Friday the 13th. Ready for some gloomy. Ready for some Halloween-y. Ready for some, like, leaves falling and rain.
Horror movies?
You're going to love next Friday, then, when it's 90.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Wow.
Really?
Rain on the parade.
Next week.
I know about that.
Yeah.
It's on the apps.
It's all the way up then.
It's going to be upper 80s. I know. Because I was looking at the forecast, and we have the faux fall thing every year, but I still can't get over it when it happens. It still angers me.
I know. Yeah.
Every year.
I feel you. Coming up a day after that, so a week from tomorrow, the 21st, is the greatest show on turf day at the Cardinals. Wheels, what's going on?
Yeah, so they're going to celebrate, which is crazy to think it's the 25th anniversary of the greatest show on turf. But on the 21st, so that's a week from tomorrow, last homestand, last weekend of the season. On Saturday, they're going to be doing this. I say this thing, but it's a lot of things. So they're going to be a bunch of different theme tickets you can get. So one of them, you'll get a baseball hat that's got it's a celebration of the greatest show on turf. There's another one where the other theme ticket where you'll get Mike Martz, Mike Jones, and Ricky Prohl taking part in a discussion, like in a panel, so you can be a part of that. And that'll be at 4:30 p.m. before the game. And then the other one, the big one, is the theme ticket that will get you Isaac Bruce, Marshall Faulk, Torrey Holt in the Bud Terrace. The three of them will be in the Bud Terrace signing autographs at 3:45. But remember this. So for every one of the theme tickets, you get one autograph. Okay, so if you buy four tickets for a group, you'll get four autographs. Mm-hmm. So you can't get a ticket and then get everyone's autograph. Just want to be clear about it because it won't work from managing the crowd. Yeah. It's too crazy. So every ticket gets you an autograph. So if you go with four people, you could get Isaac and Marshall and Torrey and Mike Martz, but you couldn't get all four of them on all four tickets. Just want to be clear about that. so that anybody that gets there is not confused or upset or disappointed. It is a crowd management thing because there are going to be a lot of people that want to celebrate that. Yeah. So it's cardinals.com/greatest show on turf.
Very good.
Get all of the theme tickets and all that stuff and have fun on Saturday. I can't believe that was 25 years ago.
I know. That's weird.
Yeah.
Like, I remember it. Obviously, we all remember it so well. I remember it exactly what we did for Super Bowl, and I painted my face, and it was, you know, just like, it was just such a thing.
That's also one of those teams, though, that was bigger than just the hometown fans loved it.
Yeah.
Right? Like the 85 Bears. There are some other, some of the Bulls teams are like, where they were, they transcended that. Mm-hmm. It was a sport-wide phenomenon. I mean, that Rams team, the greatest show on turf.
Yeah.
Is one of the great individual season teams you can think of in modern NFL history.
It was so much fun to watch.
Yeah, that's the thing.
It came from nowhere.
Yeah, it came out of nowhere with Kurt Warner, obviously.
Yeah.
They were expected to be pretty good with Trent Green. And I think I told the story the other day, but I was doing sporting news radio, doing national radio, and somebody from St. Louis called and like, after the Trent Green injury, like, you think they can still make the playoffs? And I laughed at him. I'm like, no. This guy was bagging groceries a month ago. Like, no. And then a month later, we're all like, well, I guess he's pretty good. I guess Kurt Warner's okay.
The odds of that are, you know.
No, like, they're very small, right?
One in a million.
Right, and that's why he's such a great story. That's why Kurt Warner's story is so special. He's the combination of the greatness of a guy like Tom Brady, but with the unexpected underdog nature of where he came from.
You know, we've done that twice in St. Louis. I'm old enough to really remember, and they're still to this day my favorite sports team of all time, were the football Cardinals. And with Coach Coryell, Eric Coryell, and we were running the West Coast offense before anybody was, and you know, just the way that we played.
Yeah, what an innovator he was.
Yeah, that was really cool.
And those are things like, and there are times like Whitey Ball is this, right? Things that are bigger than just the fandom in the town, right? Mm-hmm. Because people hear 2011 is magical. That's not a season that baseball fans everywhere are going to be like, yeah, you remember the 2011 Cardinals? That's not, but they do that for Whitey Ball. They will do that for the greatest show on turf. That'll be a thing people think about in New York and in Boston and in Chicago. Football fans will remember that and remember what it was. Because it was so different.
Since we're talking about it, let's just keep talking about sports. The last couple days with the Cardinals, the new people bringing up.
Yeah, I mean, we're starting to get a look. I mean, obviously, Thomas Tejesi has played ever since coming up. And they've had some need because Brendan Donovan's been banged up. And Nolan Gorman is still down in Memphis trying to get sorted out. But he's an interesting guy that could be a part of next year. And what's really fascinating about him and a few of these other guys, whether it's Walker or eventually Victor Scott, or Lucan Baker, is what role do they have next year?
I know we're not great, and I know we have a lot of issues, but we seem to have an embarrassment of riches in a certain strata of player.
Oh, yeah. You have a lot of B and B-plus players. You have a lot of people like Lars Nootbaar and Brendan Donovan. They're really good at this. They're great at finding good, solid players, and they have been forever. Where they've had trouble is developing the stars. Which is why yesterday when you brought up Nolan Gorman, I was pointing out that that's a guy you have to fix. You have to be able to get him right because he has the ability to be an all-star. I mean, hit 27 home runs in 3/4 of a year last year. He can hit 30 home runs in the big leagues. You need to figure him out. You need to figure out Jordan Walker.
Walker, that's the big one.
Those two guys should be at least occasional all-stars as their futures go on.
Yep.
They're very young, so everybody needs to keep that in mind. Like, there are a lot of, like, Jordan Walker would, if he were Aaron Judge, would still be in college. Aaron Judge was in college at the age that Jordan Walker is. So, you know, you have to understand that sometimes the path is not the same for everybody. You've got the kid in Milwaukee, Jackson Chourio, who is 20 years old, and he just hit his 20th home run yesterday. So he's the youngest 2020 player ever. Youngest player ever with 20 homers and 20 steals in a season. It's not like all young guys do that. That's more the exception than the rule. But you've got to get those guys to be stars.
Where do you think Ohtani's going to end up?
50-50, for sure.
He's a 47
home runs. He's at 47
home runs
and 48 steals, and he's got 15, 16 games. He'll get there. I mean, and think of what a freak he is. Like, think about, like, and this is all while he's missing the year on the mound because of Tommy John surgery. Like, this is his Tommy John recovery, is to go post the first 50-50 season ever. assuming he gets there. But it made me think of another thing. I'm curious what you think of this, Ronj. This can only happen because he didn't grow up in the United States. If he grew up here, he would not be a two-way player. It wouldn't be allowed. He would have been allowed to do it if he went to college. But once you turn pro, they don't let you. They don't let you do both. Mason Wynn was a two-way player out of high school. He was a pitcher throwing 98 miles an hour, and he was a shortstop. And when he was a pro, they're like, you're a shortstop. And I'm not saying it's necessarily that there are that many guys out there that can do both. But you have zero chance of doing that if you're born in the United States. Or if you're signed out of the Dominican or Venezuela
Will
as an amateur.
Will he do it when he recovers?
Oh, yeah, yeah. He'll go back to being, and he'll be their number one starter. Like, he'll be a Cy Young contender. Like, that's the crazy part, is that he's a 50-50 hitter, and he's a Cy Young guy.
What is his game as a pitcher? Who would you compare him to?
I mean, he throws 100 miles an hour. He strikes people out. So he's basically some combination of, if you want to go like bigger
Sonny
old school
Gray
names.
And Brian Helsley?
He's basically, no, he's like Willie Mays combined with Nolan Ryan. That's what he is, which is so stupid.
He's unbelievable. And I know that there are people, well, by now, I think most people have gotten over the DH thing because there was so much pushback against it for so many years. Oh, no, National League Baseball. I love watching the pitcher hit. Like, ugh.
Well, if there's no DH, he wouldn't be playing
this
year.
If there's no DH, there would be no Shohei Ohtani. There'd be no him pitching and hitting.
Right. Because they're not going to play him in the field after pitching. No, not going to happen. So, you know, that innovation certainly helps. And I would love for major league organizations to maybe take more guys that have the dual threat capability and let them develop both ways. But you come up here, it's not going to happen. This only happened because they let him do it in Japan, and then he was so good at it that when he came here, he controlled it. He said, if you don't let me do both, I'm not signing with you.
See, you would know this real well. At what level? In college, they let you hit if you're a pitcher.
Sometimes.
But once you... Right? But once you get to A ball, that's...
I don't know of anybody in the pros that is allowed to do it more than, like, they'll hit every day and then maybe relieve once a week. Like, they don't let people...
They don't want you to get hurt.
Right. They're so worried about injuries that are probably going to happen anyway that they won't even let somebody give it an opportunity to be this special unicorn that we see. Mm-hmm. Because what he's doing is unprecedented, but partly unprecedented because... Major league teams will not develop their own players that way. They will not do it. He did it all himself, obviously with the help of his professional teams in Japan. But if he can, I'm not saying everybody could be him, but why couldn't you be someone who's an everyday player who also is a closer or a relief pitcher or a spot starting pitcher or be an everyday starter and be a part-time hitter? Like, how much more valuable would you be to your roster if you were essentially a player and a half?
Would you welcome it with Mason Wynn, or would you say we're fine the way we are?
Probably too far down the path of not pitching to go back to it, but why not from the beginning? Why wouldn't it be helpful to have him? So instead of, you know, you get into a spot where you're running out of pitchers, and instead of playing the shuffle everybody back and forth between Memphis and, well, we're going to call up Chris Roycroft, and then we're going to send him down, we're going to bring up Leahy, and then we're going to send down Leahy. Why not have a guy who can essentially be your 14th pitcher, but he's a starting position player?
It just seems like with as much problem as everybody has with pitching, why wouldn't you want to try and have as many options as you possibly can? Why would you limit that?
I don't know. And I know this. I know a lot of pitchers were great hitters when they were young. And even if it's just you're a starting pitcher, but guess what? You could probably DH once or twice a week and be an asset for the team. Maybe you pinch hit late in the game, but we allow you to train for both so that you can be more than one thing. Maybe you can't be Ohtani. Most people can't. I mean, let's be honest. 99.99% of all people that have come through baseball cannot be Shohei Ohtani. He's one of one as we know it. But that doesn't mean you can't be an impact guy in two ways.
Do pro pitchers not even take at bats?
Well, so in the minor leagues, no. Even when the pitchers hit. Like Jack Flaherty, just as an example, I bring this up because at the time when people were mad about the DH coming in, I made this point. I think Jack Flaherty in his minor league career, playing for a National League team where when he would come up, he would have to hit. I think he had 17 at-bats in his entire minor league career in like 5 years.
Wow.
4 or 5 years. So, yeah, basically one at-bat a month for the years that he was in the minors. They're not going to get that. And again, I understand it. I understand you got to get at bats for your hitters. But you know that most of your minor league hitters are never going to make it to the major leagues. If you have a special talent, why wouldn't you at least create that opportunity for somebody that's done it before? Like the kid the Royals just drafted, Jack Caliendo out of Florida. All-time home run, single-season home run leader in college baseball history. Also throws 100 miles an hour when he's on the mound. Why wouldn't you let him be an everyday player and then occasionally pitch as a left-handed reliever throwing 100?
Maybe it's going to happen.
I hope that that's the hope with Ohtani.
But you have to identify who that guy could be before you allow it. Because if he... otherwise, you're allowing somebody to take up essentially two roster spots when you're trying to develop young players. So you have to feel pretty confident that he can do both things.
It's got to be a unique case, right?
You have to know it's unique.
So in this case, like a guy like Caliendo, he's 6'5", 245 pounds, throws 100, and he hit like 40 home runs in a college season of 65 games. Like, that's a first-round draft pick. Now, are you going to do that with every player who thinks they can do that? No. But with the guys that show special ability in both, why not try it?
Agreed. Continuing with sports, we talked about the Guardian helmets.
Yeah, the Guardian cap things,
The big poofy things
the that
make you look
helmets.
Like a mushroom head. and you said that you didn't have all the information. Now you have more?
Well, I did some digging on it because it's a story. They're asking because of the Tua Tagovailoa thing last night. He got another concussion. And the story's coming up. People are asking, should guys now have to wear the Guardian caps in games to help protect from that? And I did some digging on my own and didn't take long. It took me all of like 1 minute to search Guardian caps CTE. So that's the subconcussive hits, right? Because when we talk about concussions, that's only one kind of brain injury. That's the short term. Well, it has long term impact, but that's what you see like last night when Tua gets knocked out. But then you have the subconcussive hits that pile up. It's like putting one penny on top of another over 50 years, and eventually you're going to have a skyscraper, right? And what the National Institute of Health did was a study on these Guardian caps, and here was their conclusion. The data suggests no difference in head kinetics data with the Guardian caps. It says the study suggests that they are not effective in reducing the magnitude of head impacts experienced by American Division I football players, because that's where they did the study. They did the study on that. So it's not to say that there's no benefit, because there may be some small benefit, but Ranj made the great point. We were just talking about it. Nothing stops your head from shaking inside your skull, whether you're hit or not. Your brain will shake every time you move your head. It's just a matter of whether or not it hits up against the skull. So no matter what's on the outside, if your neck moves, your brain moves, and it smacks into the inside of your skull. Those are the subconcussive hits. The bigger hits, you might be able to reduce the force with these kind of Guardian caps, but this is saying there was no real measurable difference. Again, National Institute of Health, not according to Kevin Wheeler.
So how long did they study it?
I think it was
because they haven't been around that long.
No, I think it was just one period of practices and games during a college football season recently. So it wasn't multiple years or anything like that.
And I don't know if we explained it, but Guardian caps are the things they put over the helmets.
Right. They look like they put it, like the big mushroom head things.
Would you let your son play Little League football?
No, I've said it before. Every kid's different because every kid's body is different. Teenage years would be the first years I would let kids play tackle football.
Yep.
And that's not based on my judgment. That's what the leading researchers into CTE say. There's a doctor at Boston University who's kind of been at the front of this, who said she would not allow kids to play tackle football until 13 or 14.
And when I was growing up, in Granite City, we didn't have a Pee Wee football league. The earliest you could play was eighth grade.
Yeah. And again, I understand why people play before that. I'm not saying...
Which in Granite City, most eighth graders are 21 years old. So.
That's correct. Yeah, you could drive then. Yeah.
But you got to know your kid, right? If your kid's small, they're more likely to get hit like that and have the brain damage.
You'll know what I'm talking about. I've seen something where the most brutal measured hit of all time was a 9-year-old.
It was a study done by Virginia Tech. And they were measuring two little guys. It was 2 9-year-olds running into each other. It was the most violent hit they recorded as far as the head snapping back and the measurement of the brain shaking.